Welcome to Your Path to FI. Master your money, unlock more time, and gain the freedom to live your life on your terms. We'll be talking to amazing people from the FI community to inspire, educate, and help you on your financial independence journey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Your Path to FI. We've got myself, we've got my co-host, Matt, and today we've got Mr. Lazy, and we will explain the name in due course. But Mr. Lazy has been pursuing FI and on the FI roadmap and recently embarked on a couple of side hustles, which as of 2020, his side hustles now cover 25% of his expenses. So we're going to be digging in today about Mr. Lazy's FI journey, but also his introduction into the side hustle world and how that has been a game changer in how he looks at his time and his path to FI. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce the man himself, Mr. Lazy, to tell us a little bit about himself and a little bit about his journey into the FI world.
Hi, I'm Lazy FI Dad. You can call me Mr. Lazy. That's fine. No offense. Story about side hustles and how I started. So I moved to the UK from Israel towards the end of 2015. With some student debt, mainly to the bank and my parents. It's not like here, like you need to pay it back at a certain time. It's not like the UK system with tax. And I really, really wanted to pay it back. And I decided I'll do everything I can to pay it by the end of 2016. I don't know if you remember, but between the end of 2015 and end of 2016, there was the Brexit referendum, which means the pound tanked and I was earning in pounds and repaying in another currency. So my debt grew by 20-25% overnight, but I still managed to pay it off in December 2016. So that's when I started. I started by Googling something very cliche, I think is how to get out of debt. And I started with Dave Ramsey, so very American. If you're familiar with Dave Ramsey, he's really, really good at getting people out of debt. He has like 7 baby steps. So the first one is get $1,000 of emergency fund. Fine, did that in pounds. Then pay off your debt except your home from the biggest to the smallest, regardless of interest. Fine. Then build emergency fund of 3 to 6 months. And then he has a few baby steps that I kind of lost him there because it's like, save for your kids' college. Not as big of a deal in the UK. Pay off your home. I didn't own my home then. And then save 15%. And he was talking to me about, by the way, I listened to his podcast or his radio show again and again. Like I forced myself to be brainwashed and focus on it all day. I was saving 80 to 85%. And you just telling me to go down to 15 was, are you kidding me? I got all these skills. Let's do something with this. So I don't know how, but at that stage, after paying off my debt, I've kind of outgrown him and looked for FI material. My side hustle is teaching in general, but specifically in the last few years, it's teaching Excel. So I used to teach even before I moved to the UK. I used to teach finance, accounting, and economics as a private tutor while I was doing my bachelor's degree in Israel. I still did it a bit remotely when I moved here, then it died down. And then I started teaching Excel, and you tell me what level of detail you want me to go into. I think that is kind of an overview.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like it's quite a journey to have to deal with debt and then to think of ways of trying to accelerate your earnings. What was your primary job, and how did you manage to get the side hustle to sort of run side by side with that? And then also curious to know how you managed to promote yourself as an Excel teacher and what their journey was like.
No worries. So I moved to the UK with debt, as I said. When I was in Israel, I was one of the most expensive tutors out there. I was good at what I did. I have lots of weaknesses. You can ask my wife, she'll give you a full list. But I know what I'm good at and what I'm not. I'm good at teaching. I knew my stuff. So when I left Israel, I still had people say, hey, are you still teaching? Are you still teaching? Can you teach us? And not everyone wanted remote teaching. It's before days of COVID. So what I did then is I hired some tutors. I interviewed them, I trained them and everything, and I linked them to students. So that was my side hustle at the time, just connecting students to tutors, and I'd take a commission off the tutor, which is kind of how I started tutoring when I was back in Israel. That is when I was paying off my debt, to answer your first part. What was my first time job, which is a nice transition to how I got into Excel. I'm an accountant. So I did my bachelor's degree in Israel in accounting. I did my professional exams in Israel in accounting, finished them. I don't have a license because I never worked there. I don't have the experience. That's the only part I'm missing. And then I moved to the UK to a big four firm and did it all again from scratch, but in English. But it was okay. I knew the material. It wasn't too bad. And there were two main softwares that accountants worked on. One, which is very firm specific that you did audit on, which I never really liked. I never really saw the point of like, yeah, you need it for your job, but it's not transferable skill, right? You won't be able to use it anywhere else. And then there was Excel, which got me really excited because every little thing that I learned in Excel, I knew it would save me hours or a few minutes. So I remember one busy period, we were on a away client. That means you stay in a hotel because it's way out of London. And we would finish every day at 1 a.m. And I used to watch YouTube tutorials between 1 and 2:30 a.m. And then at 8, you'd be at breakfast and ready to go. I realized I wasn't good at Excel and it was a transferable skill. And the last question that you asked me is, how did I build it or promote myself? Which is, I'll tell you my story. I don't think anyone can replicate it for that reason. You'll hear it in a second. As I said, I know what I'm good at and what I'm bad at. I'm not good at marketing. I'm really not. Luckily, I have two friends from uni in Israel that built a very successful Excel business. One of them now works for one of the biggest companies in the world. He doesn't have time to deal with this. The other one, very funny, is not allowed to teach Excel because although he's trained as an accountant, he's now a product manager in Microsoft and he manages Excel. So there's a conflict. So they had to give the business away. So I'd say I take it. I'm good at teaching. I love Excel. I love learning. And I pay the one that works in Microsoft isn't even allowed to get money off it, but I pay a percentage of the revenue or profits. It's almost the same that my business barely has any cost. And I pay them a percentage, but they build a marketing machine. Work just comes to me. I just need to call leads and close it. Hopefully that answers your question.
It does indeed. I was also just curious to know about what are your ultimate goals. So it sounds like you've got this side hustle mentality. You're trying to maximize your savings rate. What are you aiming at? Is there sort of a vision that you want to be financially independent by a certain age? Do you want to have some kind of partial financial independence like Coastify? What is it that you're aiming at?
That's a great question. I think it's both. So first of all, my final goal has to be split into two. I'm a dad. I have two young kids. My daughter is between 2 and 3 years old, and my son is not even one. My end goal is to spend as much time as I can with them. I don't know if you heard, but there's a blog called, I don't remember the name of the blog, but they have a post called The Tail End. I don't know if you've read this, that shows that by the time your kids are 18, you've probably spent more than 90% of the time you'll ever spend with them because they move out. You know, you only see them once a week compared to 24/7. This is my time to spend with my kids. I don't have time to waste. I need to get there as fast as possible. My end goal is to spend time with my family. I love them. I can't get enough of them. That's one. But from a career perspective, I like what I do as an accountant. It's not my end goal. I love teaching. I love teaching and I love helping people and helping them save time. I want people to be more lazy and be more efficient and save time. If a job can be done in 1 hour instead of eight, yeah, do it. Then, I don't know, chill 7 hours or get some more tasks to get a promotion. I don't know. You do. So my end goal is spend as much time as family. So the money from the Excel is obviously helping, but I want to just focus on Excel. When you say reach full FI or not, we're going to move to Israel in around 3.5 years. 3 to 4 years. I want to get as close to FI as possible by then, but my latest forecast show that we'll hit roughly 50% of our FI number by then in 3-4 years. That's based on English level of expenses. I still need to do the research for Israel. That is kind of the three end goals. Get as far as I can in 3-4 years. Hopefully by then, retire from accounting and just focus on teaching. And this all leads to more time with family before they're teenagers and hate me and don't want to spend time with me.
I love the focus on acceleration. I think I definitely had that attitude as well, which was get there as fast as I possibly could. So in light of that, Guy, you've obviously unlocked this additional lever in your FI journey, which is a way to boost your income. So I'm really keen to understand, just in light of this lens of trying to accelerate, how that's impacted you and your side hustle, and I guess your strategy behind your side hustle. So I'm quite keen to unpick what that's looked like over the past couple of years. So I guess if we focus on at what year those two friends handed you over that kind of Excel business, and then from that moment, kind of what's changed? What have you worked on? Have you been kind of increasing the clients? Have you been growing that side hustle? So I guess the core premise of the question is, from being given this side hustle, what have you then done between kind of today and when it was given to you to try and accelerate your way to FI through, I guess, growing that side hustle?
Okay, so of course I have an Excel that tracks everything. And I can see that my first invoice from the business was around August 21. So it's kind of new. 22 was the first full year. So the answer is, I started, let's say, a year and a half ago. How has it affected and accelerated? First of all, every income accelerates it, of course. Second of all, I really, really enjoy what I do. It's more of a hobby than a job. That's why it's not a second job. It is a side hustle. I really love what I do. If you're focused on something you love and you have a hobby, it's less time to spend money elsewhere, right? So it's also that kind of thing. But it affected us two ways. So I have our 2022 numbers in front of me. So my Excel income for 2022 was just over 10% of our total household income, which is cool. And it covered just under 25%, 24.5% if you want to be exact, 24.5% of our expenses. So that's not bad. That means if this was sustainable and we were staying in the UK, that means I only need three quarters of my FI number. I need my ETF portfolio, as you called it, to cover three quarters of our expenses, assuming my wife doesn't want to work, but she loves work. She wants to work forever. So 75% has to come from my wife or investment, and I'll cover 25% if it keeps going. As I said, I don't do a lot to get new clients in case of growing. That my friends built marketing machine that works really well. As I said, I talk to leads, close them if needed. Most of my work is corporate clients. We do have a big client that books, I don't know, 10, 20 hours every quarter. Don't forget, I do have a full-time job. This is a lot for me. I do rarely one-to-ones, or I do projects like, I did two really cool projects, three. Sorry, I can't forget you guys. We'll talk about this in a second. But I had one entrepreneur that wanted to raise some money. So they had to build a model to forecast their income and expenses for the next 3 years. So I helped them build that from scratch. Another company that I did training for hired me again to automate some of their files, which is my dream, you know, all about automation and laziness. And the third one, which is, I think, how we got to this call, is I'm behind the financial models of Topia, which is the most fun one, of course. I have to say that, but that is true.
Yeah, so we know who to come to and if the numbers don't work. Actually, interestingly, I've got a similar background to you. I'm passionate about Excel and automation. And the way Logan and myself met was, I was actually building something very similar to what the app does, and in Excel to try and predict my FI date. And then I heard Logan's interview on a podcast and I got really excited because it sounded like he was doing exactly the same thing. So yeah, big passion for Excel. So really interesting to hear how you've sort of evolved and how you've brought this side hustle to become something that might even become your full-time activity. And I think the thing I really like about that and the sort of mentality around side hustles is it starts off potentially as doing something you just enjoy. It might grow into something that generates some income. But the big thing is it actually gives you a clue as to what you might want to do one day when you're financially independent. Because it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like you're not the kind of person who's going to just sit back and do nothing. You're going to be active after you're financially independent, which I think is a really healthy thing. Is that fair to say?
I do miss my favorite computer game, which I haven't played for 3-4 years. So I do want to do a bit of that. But yes, I love teaching. That is what I want to do. As I said, I want to spend time with my kids. And if I can teach even 10, 15 hours every week, which is quite a lot for the side hustle every week, it leaves me more than enough time with my kids. Like when they're at school, that is my dream life. Like every day, look a bit after my health, teach while they're in school, and then come back. There's one thing I wanted to add. You asked how it affected my life. And there is one more thing. The extra income didn't all go into saving. A large chunk of it went on increasing lifestyle. Good, bad thing. I know it's anti-FI sometimes, but it's not all of it. Our savings rate has still increased. We tried to keep over 50% and we just hit it for the second year in a row. So I'm happy with that. Anything more than that, I'm happy to like spend. But it also really, really increased our lifestyle, and it kind of calmed me down and allowed me to spend more.
What drove that decision, Guy?
Which decision?
Well, you must have, I'm sure you ran the numbers. You must have got to the equation of, do we maintain current lifestyle and get to FI X years sooner, or do we spend a bit more on the now, increase the lifestyle and elongate that timeline slightly?
Yeah, so there's, again, two parts to this question. I think you sense the theme by now. First of all, as long as you save enough and there's a balance. You don't want to be saving 90% and feeling deprived, right? And then you don't want to spend everything and feel like, okay, I'm going to be working in a cubicle until I'm 80. No one wants, I don't know. I don't want that. My wife, maybe, I don't know. You can ask her. So 50% kind of puts me at ease because it's a really impressive number, especially because I've got two kids in full-time childcare. There's no more expensive time than now. It's only going to get cheaper. We do want more kids in the future, but you know what I mean? Our kids are at the most expensive. Even uni isn't as expensive as full-time childcare. So if we're hitting 50% now, that's fine. And it is, as I said, a lot of our spending, like I'm just looking at our holiday expenditure, it more than doubled in 2022. Partly because my daughter is now 2 and pays for flights. Okay, fine. But as I said, this is my time to spend with my kids. If I can go on holidays and create experience with them, this is it. I'll tell you a quick story. My daughter has been to the play of Tiger Who Came to Tea 3 times now. Disney just came out with a Winnie the Pooh musical, so we booked that. So my daughter, bless her, thinks that, okay, every book I read now has a play we should go to, right? So we started reading Bear Hunt. I'm going on a bear hunt. Are you familiar with that? Very English, okay. So she said, okay, Abba, which is daddy in English, when are we going to the bear hunt? Sean, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's even a show. And she asked that on Thursday. I Googled it and we're going Friday. It's not a lot of money, but you know, just for both of us, it's 40, 50 pounds, something. But I'm not going to second guess that, because as long as I'm hitting 50% and I can buy whatever I want for my kids and create these experiences, our holidays are in Center Park, which I heard is expensive, but we go off season. I still can't believe how cheap that is. Yeah, this is the time to spend time and money on my family, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It makes me think of the book, which I've actually mentioned on the podcast before, Die with Zero. I don't know if you've read that one. It's a brilliant book because it helps to give you sort of the flip side of the coin view. A lot of us in this community are so focused on trying to save and invest and make our money grow and last forever. But this book turns it on its head and it tries to help you to think about what kind of value is presented in the things that you buy and the things that you do, and to try and make a good assessment in terms of, is it worth spending my money on this object or on this activity? And it's almost like, if you think about it from a perspective of memories, the more memories you create, it's almost like an investment. It's like it pays dividends because you have the memory, and then every time you recall it, you basically get some kind of reward, some kind of happy moment. So I think things like that, experiences with your children, sound like a wonderful way to spend your money and to do things that really add value to your life. So it's good. It sounds like you've got a good balance there. I'm just curious about what have been the highlights on your FI journey, and when did your journey begin? When did you first become aware of FI, financial independence? And for you, what are the milestones on that journey?
Yeah, happy to share that. First of all, you said Die with Zero. I haven't heard of it, but there's 2 external places I want to send you for a second. First of all, you said memories, right? There's a great Mr. Money Mustache post. I don't remember its name, but it says that most people compare material stuff and experiences. And there is a third one. Everyone, I think, agrees by now that experiences are better than material stuff, right? For your happiness, long-term happiness. But there is a third thing, which is saving, allowing you to sleep better at night. It's a great post, but worth mentioning. Now, I haven't read Die With Zero, is that the name? But what helped me spend, and I've really been working on it for the last year, because frugality is the word, right? Which is leading in the FI community. I don't know if you're familiar with Ramit Sethi from I Will Teach You to Be Rich.
No.
His podcast is amazing. It's the one I wait for every week. So he has couples on it and he talks to them. It's more like couples therapy, but relating to money. and you really see millionaires there, like with $5-6 million, like agonizing about. There was one in the last episode. They're a couple in their 60s, I think. They're worth $6.3 million. And he was agonizing about filling gas. And then 2 miles later, he saw it for 10 cents cheaper. And he walks them through and how it's okay to spend. It's kind of me brainwashing myself again, but I've listened to everyone. I wait for it every week. I read his book as an audio version. I listened to his book. But the podcast, his podcast, Ramit Sethi, I'll Teach You to Be Rich, I think is a 70-something episode. I caught it when there were only like 10, so it was easy for me, has taught me how to spend, because in the FI community, we learn how to save and invest. Kind of just spend as little as possible, which, as you said, is not the right thing to do. Yeah, so that really taught me how to spend. And that's, I think, a big transition I made in the last year. And the income from the side hustle helped me. About my FI, as I said, Dave Ramsey towards the end of 2015. And then I outgrew it. I didn't like his further baby steps. And I don't remember who I started with listening to, but I think there's an Israeli blogger called Hasolidit. She's also anonymous. She writes like really, really, really high quality in Hebrew, though. So I'm a big fan. So I read a lot of her. And I did read every single post from Mr. Money Mustache so far, which I'm a slow reader. That took me ages. So I think these were the first two ones. I don't remember the other parts of your question. I apologize.
No, I think you covered it. It was just, I was really curious to know about the sort of milestones, and you've spoken about the things which gave you inspiration, the books, the podcasts. So that does answer your question. But if you think of anything that comes up during our conversation that you want to add, then feel free.
I'll add now, just because you mentioned milestones. So when I do our numbers, I post our monthly results every period with percentages. There's no pound values. If you're looking for that stuff, I'm not the right person for you. Your net worth changes so much, but it's a lot. Also, I set our goal in July 2020 and I adjust it to inflation every month. So my percentage of our FI number is the real one, like real, not nominal. So it's adjusted for inflation. So there's three main things that affect our number or our percentage of our FI goal: inflation, which I have no control over, the stock market, which I have no control over, and our savings rate, which is the only one I can control, which is why I focus on that. So our milestones is just hitting the 50%, and I'm really excited about hitting it for the second year running. So this is my big milestone. Once we move to Israel, if I can see that my wife earns enough and we have enough invested, a very big milestone is I can just focus on Excel and teaching/tutoring. That is a future milestone we're aiming for.
A big part of your journey, or I guess your kind of motive and incentive, is to obviously make the most of spending time with your kids before you lose that window where you spend 90% of your time with them. I see a lot of trends in the FI community, in the FI world, around this idea of the FI journey shouldn't be kind of 0 to 1 and you're just shooting to hit one and then boom, you unlock all this freedom and you have all this time, and this big emergence of mini retirements and, you know, taking a couple of years off, put, you know, your kind of FI progress on the back burner and then jump back into another career. You know, your journey kind of rings some bells in terms of those attributes being quite applicable. Have you ever considered maybe, you know, taking 5 years off at the kind of peak time of your kids and then jumping back into a full-time role? Has that ever come into your roadmap?
It has come in and it left just as quickly. I just want something permanent, like get to your FI number, finish with it, and not have to rely on anyone. Like, get the actual financial independence. I don't want to be dependent on anyone. So I'm happy to do that. And it's also easier for me because in finance, you earn more money in the UK than in Israel, at least in my levels. So it's very easy for me to just work hard, not work as hard as, you know, I don't know what you call it in English, but yeah, not work as hard, do the minimum that you have to do to get your job done properly and happily, that everyone's happy with you. So not work hard, play hard, like just play hard. I'm okay with that. So I'm not thinking of any time off while I'm in the UK. That's why it's just getting as close as you can before we move to Israel in 3 to 4 years. And hopefully my wife plus investment plus Excel will do that. I don't remember which podcast, but there is someone called it Wife Fi, which is another way of reaching Fi. So I have heard that. Not my original one, but yeah.
I wanted to ask a couple of technical questions. So also being an Excel advocate and having calculated FI for myself, what do you do in a situation where we're facing inflation of 10%, for example, do you assume that things are going to come back down to normal levels around 2.5 to 3% and only model based on that? Or do you find your FI target stretching out into the future because we've now hit 10%? That's the one question. And the second one is, I think you use savings rate to project your forecast financial independence date. I use my expenditure per year. Very similar thing. But what do you do if you have an incredibly expensive year last year and say this year is more down to normal? Do you take the average of the last 3 years? Do you just take the last years? How do you deal with those variables?
So I set our goal in July 2020 and I adjust it for inflation. That's one. So my goal is adjusted every month using CPIH, Consumer Price Index, and H is for housing. If you own a home, that's just more applicable for you. I just update it based on that. And I do check it every few months just to see, is it still right? To be honest, it won't be right, but I don't know our level of expenditure in Israel, so it's the best I have. For inflation, so if you expect, let's say, the market to go up by 10% and inflation to be 4%, the real return or real yield is roughly 6%. It's more likely 1.1 over 1.04. Logan has seen how pedantic I am about these little things, but roughly 10% minus 4%, roughly 6%. So my model just assume a real rate of 4%. All throughout. So let's say next year inflation is 7%. I just assume the market will do 11. If it goes back to 2, I'm just assuming market does 6. So I'm already looking at everything in real rates. Hopefully that answers the question.
That suggests that there's an assumption that the market will always sort of rise above inflation by a certain percentage. Okay, great.
4%, yeah. This is actually prudent in the long term. I think the average is 6-7, but I know it goes up and down. And I had to make an assumption.
Okay. And then about your expenditure. So if you had a very expensive year last year, do you take a rolling average of the last 3 years and sort of that flattens out your extraordinary expensive year last year? Because say, for example, you spend an extra third in the last year, that could really knock your financial independence day right out into the future. So I'm just curious, do you sort of flatten that those spikes by taking an average of the last few years, or how do you deal with that?
No. So first of all, I just ran calculation. Our expenses in 2022 were 23-24% higher than 2021. So that happens. So as I said, what I did, I kind of flattened our expenses in July 2020. I adjust them to inflation. And every few months, do I look at it? Does that still sound reasonable? But also one thing I want to say again, which is really important. Currently, we're hitting 50%, which I'm very happy with. But my kids are in full-time childcare. In 2 more years, assuming no more kids, it's going to go down a lot. Childcare is a big part. 2 kids of childcare is just more than a mortgage. And that is going to go away because after they reach age 3, 3 and a bit, I know the rules. It's not that they don't cost anything, but they don't cost nearly as much. So if I'm kind of tracking this one, it'll only get better. So if you think about it, our current level is still very prudent.
And a question I have for you to veer us away from the technicalities of tracking progress at FI is, in the FI community, I know one thing for sure, which is that a lot of people have a similar passion to you around Excel. When me and Matt first met, he showed me his Excel. It was a bit of a beast as well. So I think what I want to probe at here is what you've managed to do very successfully is turn a passion into a side hustle. And your route was quite a nice one with the two friends you had giving you that marketing machine. But for other people out there listening to this who have a passion for Excel or any other passion, I guess, what would you recommend them to do from a kind of an action item standpoint to start transitioning that passion project into some sort of side hustle?
Yeah. So first of all, focus on something that you love and that you're good at. If you can find something that ticks both boxes, this is your field, go for it. Even if it doesn't make you a lot of money, if you enjoy it, you'll be able to endure hardship and struggles and anything that comes your way. I really, really enjoy teaching and automating and simplifying things. I love it. That is what I do. I also have a beast of an Excel file, of course. My way of building my Excel business is not really replicable, which is fine. But I can tell you how I built my reputation in Israel. That's very replicable. If you're good at marketing, fine, brilliant, go do that as well. I'm talking about tutoring businesses now. I'm not. So what I used to do, I found someone who had lots of students or an agency. I know there's big agencies in the UK here that will pay you per hour. You either get I don't know, 40, 50, 60 pounds an hour. They could charge 120, I don't care. So there's two things here. First of all, pay someone to find you the clients if you're not good at it. I used to pay a lot. So when I was in Israel and I was teaching accounting, economics, and finance, I used to pay a third of all my income to that guy who just brought me the student. So there's two ways of looking at it. Either you focus on what they get and then you'll be a miserable person. Oh my God, I'm working, they're profiting off me. Or listen, the two thirds I get to keep is probably a student that I would have never reached anyway. And if it's enough for however long you want per month, you should just be happy with what you get. You can always negotiate and ask for more. If someone gives you a good service, even if they work 1 minute on it, just sending you a contact number, and that person, I could teach that student for dozens of hours, and that person who just sent me a contact made hundreds of pounds off me. I'm okay with this because I earned enough per hour. I focused on me, not other people. What they got, I wouldn't have got that student, and I still get paid enough per hour. I'm happy. As long as you focus on that, you should be okay. And I told you when I moved to the UK, I hired some tutors. I saw the two types. Whoever focused on what I got, my commission, didn't last long at all. The other people, like, made lots of money from tutoring. In short, is first of all, just to sum up, focus on what you love and you're good at. And in the world of tutoring, and I'm sure it's applicable for others, pay someone to refer work to you if you can, and focus on what you get, not what they get. You can always negotiate, yes, but that's it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think focusing on something that you're passionate about is your best chance of finding a way of it maybe becoming some kind of revenue generating activity. I'm on a similar path, but this is purely just for my own enjoyment. I'm DJing in my spare time, creating mixes and uploading them online. And I have no idea how to monetize this. I'm not even interested right now because I just enjoy it so much. But because I'm so interested in it and I'm doing so much of it in my spare time, I'm starting to learn about how other DJs do monetize their work. And it's by osmosis. You're in that community, you're connected with those kinds of people. You're going to find out that information is going to be there. And before you know it, if you want to, you can just start switching it over into something that generates some revenue. So great advice there. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Lazy. I'll keep on my path as well. I'm just wondering as well, what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's at the beginning of their FI journey? Have you got any tips?
Yes, just about what you said. First of all, that's very cool. Let's make some revenue for you. If anyone needs a DJ, please email us and Matthew will be your DJ. Yeah, let's do a shout out. Why not? Let's start it. I don't know if that's good marketing. I said I'm not really good at it. One more thing, because it's something you're passionate about. A big thing of the FI journey is if you just retire from it, from your job because you hate your job, you're going to fall into a void and you're going to be miserable later. You're going to be very confused. All the big content creators in the FI sphere talk about retiring to something. So that also helps that. If you want to do DJ later, fine. I want to teach after. It gives me something. I'm kind of building my post-FI life. I hope you make money from DJ, but if you don't, that's kind of my blogging. I enjoy it. I don't make any money of it. What advice would I give to people on their beginning of their FI journey? First of all, if you have kids and if they're in the UK, I'll give myself a shout out. Go to lazyfidad.com. That is the place to read about FI journey with kids in the UK. That is where I try to be. That's my niche. The best book I've read so far is The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins. I love the FI world. I read books, I read academic research, I read blogs, I listen to podcasts. It's my wife really heard enough about that world, but I love it. And I've read loads and loads of books. Nothing comes close to like a one-stop shop like J.L. Collins' book. I highly recommend start. And if you want, end it there. That will give you enough. Only thing is it's very American. So there's two chapters that are irrelevant for people in the UK. So you need to learn a bit about ISIS and stuff like that. But I recommend it to my brother in Israel. And I don't think you need any more resources beside that. You can go deeper into the rabbit hole like I did. And Big Earns from Early Retirement Now, Safe Withdrawal Rate, has like 50 or 60 posts. I'm still going through that, but that is a rabbit hole. I love it, but it's not necessary. Someone starting today, if you want a resource, The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins, 100% didn't even have to think about it. And when you're starting, focus on your savings rate and avoid lifestyle inflation. So do as I say, not as I do, but I'm in a stage, I'm happy with it. If you want to stop at 50% like I did, fine. When I was paying off debt, I was 80, 90% savings rate. Depends on what stage of life you are.
That's a great set of recommendations there. I think to help with those reading the book that you recommended by J.L. Collins, The Simple Path to Wealth, those two chapters that you refer to can quite easily be explained by another book called The Meaningful Money Handbook by Pete Matthews. So Pete Matthew, he's done something similar to J.L. Collins, but specifically for the UK audience. Very simple book to read, very accessible. So that's a great one as well. Yeah, brilliant. Well, that's a lot of good content you shared with us. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to check with Logan, if, are there any other questions you wanted to ask before we let Mr. Lazy go back to his lazy ways?
No more direct questions for me, but more of a kind of semi-proposition, I guess. If people are listening to this, Mr. Lazy, and want to reach out either to ask you questions about your side hustle, maybe they're getting started or want to pursue something in the Excel space, or have any broader questions around FI journey, and especially pursuing FI with kids, what is the best way for them to get hold of you?
So I just typed it in the chat if you want to share it. So it's lazyfidad@gmail.com or on my blog, lazyfidad.com. So either way, I'm happy to help. I have a few posts that actually have embedded Excel files in them that you can download and work on it yourself. And one more resource before I get told off, sorry, Topia. Yeah, go to Topia. 100% go to Topia to simplify. If Excel isn't your forte, even if it is, just see another perspective of how someone else looks at it. Definitely. If there is a tool out there to help you, like Topia, why not use it? Be lazy. Why create something by yourself if someone already did it? 100%.
Exactly. So out of this episode, everyone listening has got a DJ in the lines of Matt. They've got an app to track their FI journey for them, and a potential side hustle / FI with family mentor as well. So a lot of offerings in one episode. But huge thanks for coming on, Mr. Lazy. It was great to hear your story. Great to hear a little bit about your journey as well. So big thanks, and looking forward to seeing your journey progress.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Your Path to FI. If you have any questions, reach out to us. You may send us an email to podcast@topia-app.com or via our podcast community. Please see the link in the show notes. None of the content on this podcast should be construed as financial advice. That's all from us for now. Catch you next time on your path to financial independence.